The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Fanny Brice stars as Baby Snooks from 1939. We'll also hear Marvin Miller as Long John Silver in a 1947 radio adaptation of Treasure Island and You Can't Win from 1956. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Marvin Miller is Long John Silver in a 1947 radio adaptation of Treasure Island, narrated by Alan Reed. We'll also hear You Can't Win from 1956. Right now, Fanny Brice stars as Baby Snooks from 1939 as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
Maxwell House presents Fanny Brice's Baby Snooks. Poor Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, has his hands full again. His silver cigarette lighter is missing, and he suspects his loving child had something to do with its disappearance. Snooks won't admit it, so we find them both at a... I haven't got the heart to tell you where he took us, so just listen.
Snooks, dear, I'm going to give you one last chance. Did you take my silver lighter?
Is this a police station?
No.
I didn't take it.
All right, I'm forced to believe you. But we'll see the psychiatrist just the same.
See who?
The psychiatrist. He's a doctor. And your behavior certainly needs looking into.
What's he gonna do, Daddy?
He'll just psychoanalyze you.
Will it hurt?
Well, of course not. He'll explore your subconscious and break down your phobias.
I wanna go home.
Now sit still. The only reason I brought you here is because you've become so hard to handle. You refuse to go to school, you won't play with your little friends, and worst of all, you make up those fantastic fibs. How you do it is beyond me.
Ain't I smart, Daddy?
Yes, very. It doesn't do any good to punish you, and I hope this doctor can get to the root of the trouble. Whoosh, somebody's coming.
Look at Daddy. Here comes a man walking on his knees.
Yeah. Yes.
Is he the doctor?
No. I think he's one of the patients. Shh.
What's he crawling around for?
I don't know. Hang on to my hand, Snooks.
Are you scared, Daddy?
No. Keep quiet.
Oh, excuse me. Have you got a piece of toast?
Huh?
Have you got a piece of toast?
Are you hungry, mister?
Oh, no, of course not. I'm tired.
Tired? No, sorry, no toast.
Oh, what a shame. I must find some. Well, toodaloo, pip-pip.
Toodaloo, pip-pip.
Oh, hello, Mr. Higgins.
Oh, hello, Doctor. Say, what's the matter with that fellow? He asked us for toast.
Yes, poor chap has an obsession. He thinks he's a poached egg and he wants to sit down. Nothing to him. Oh, there's nothing to worry about. Come on in, my child.
Why, yes, Snooks, there's nothing to worry about.
Now, my dear, your daddy has told me all about you on the telephone. I just want you to answer a few questions. First,
are you going to psychoanalyze her now, Doc?
Yes, just be quiet, please.
Oh, pardon me.
To begin with, Snooks, are you a boy or a girl?
Huh?
I say, are you a boy or a girl?
I'm a boy.
Mm-hmm. And when you grow up, will you be a man or a woman?
A man.
Mm-hmm. Now look at me closely. What am I? A train, a Christmas tree, or a bottle of mustard?
None of them.
Oh, thank heaven.
Well, what am I?
A banana.
Oh, Snooks, what's the matter with you? Why are you giving the doctor these crazy answers?
Because he asked me crazy questions.
Well, this is all a part of a test. How can the doctor psychoanalyze...
Mr. Higgins.
Oh, excuse me.
Snooks, I understand you refuse to attend school. Don't you like to go to school?
Uh-huh.
You do like going to school?
Uh-huh. And I like coming home, too.
Well?
But I don't like staying there in between.
You see, Doctor?
A very normal reaction.
Tell me, Snooks, do you have dreams?
Uh-huh.
All the time?
No, only when I'm sleeping.
I see.
Yes.
Are they nice dreams?
Beautiful.
Beautiful, huh? Did you ever dream you were a lark flitting through the welkin?
More beautifuler than that.
Like what?
I dreamed I was an elephant squirting water through my nose.
Yeah. Very funny. Very funny.
Great significance, Mr. Higgins.
Oh, sure.
Snooks, please remove your right shoe and stocking.
What for?
I want to examine your brain.
Huh?
You gotta look at my feet to see my brain?
I just want to tickle the sole of your foot. It's like a game.
I want to go home.
Oh, what kind of a test?
It's just to test a certain reflex. Babinski's sigh. Come on, Snooks, take off your shoe.
No, tickle me under the arm.
Oh, listen, Doc, is all this necessary? I just want to find out about my lighter.
Mr. Higgins, we must approach it very slowly. This child is full of inhibitions. Do you ever hit her?
Only in self-defense. What about my lighter?
Now, we'll soon find out. I'll give her the association test. But I shall have to ask you not to interrupt, Mr. Higgins.
Okay.
Now, Snooks, I want you to close your eyes and relax.
I ain't gonna close my eyes.
All right, just relax. Now, I'm going to mention some words, and as I say them, I want you to respond with the first word that comes to your mind. Understand?
No.
You do, too. He means if he says black, he wants you to say white.
Mr. Higgins.
I'm sorry.
It's very simple, Snooks. For instance, if I say the word hot, you instantly think of cold. Understand?
Understand.
All right.
All wrong?
No.
Yes.
He hasn't started yet.
Mr. Higgins.
Excuse us. Go ahead, Doc.
All right, Snooks. Now, here's the first word. Top.
Bottom. I like it.
Round.
Flat. Do some more.
Oh, keep quiet.
You too.
Oh.
Now relax, Snooks. Here's the next word. Light.
Dark.
Joy.
Sorrow.
Woe.
Yap.
Oh, what's the use?
Please, Mr. Higgins, that word indicates a very important psychic sublimation.
Get to the light.
Don't be impatient. Let's continue, Snooks.
I want to go home.
Silver.
Home.
Lighter.
Home.
That settles it. Mr. Higgins, I'll stake my professional reputation that this child had nothing to do with the disappearance of your silver lighter.
Oh, honestly? Oh, thank heaven. I'd hate to think she'd hold out so long.
She's a perfectly normal child, and you can believe me, she's entirely innocent.
Can we go now, Daddy?
Yes, dear. And I want to apologize for ever having suspected you. I'll never be hasty with you again.
No more spanking?
No, never.
All right. Here's your lighter back.
What? Well, I'll be...
Are you...
Good morning. My name is Alan Reed. I've been given the pleasant job of welcoming you to a new series of programs. Programs designed to appeal to the young in heart. The young in heart. Well, that includes just about everyone, doesn't it? Those who can look back on many wonderful experiences and adventures, and those who are eagerly looking forward to them. So to you, the young in heart, we offer this series for your listening pleasure. Today, I'd like to tell you a story that was written by Robert Louis Stevenson, a man who spent most of his life in a wheelchair, a frail man, in poor health most of the time. Yet it's possible, at least I think so, that this very fact was the reason he was able to write so many exciting adventure stories. Sitting in that wheelchair, he dreamed of the sea, led great armies into battles, fought duels with swords and cutlasses. He made adventure come to life in his imagination for you and me. I want to tell you about one of his greatest stories this morning. He called it Treasure Island. Thank you. If ever a young boy had adventure, real adventure, that boy was Master Jim Hawkins. Now, Jim was a fine young lad, hardworking, studious, but like so many of us, he loved adventure. So he was all ears and full of curiosity as he performed his duties around his mother's inn, the Admiral Benbow, it was called. One day, a strange new lodger arrived. Jim learned that his name was Billy Bones, and it was from Billy Bones that Jim eventually obtained the map of the island. Oh, but wait a minute. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's start from the beginning. It is late one afternoon. It's the early 18th century. Squire Trelawney has given Jim a note to take to John Silver, an old sailor who lives at the Spyglass Inn on the coast of England. Jim enters the inn and, inquiring for Silver, is ushered upstairs and told to knock on the door.
Aye!
Begging your pardon, sir.
Aye, what's wanted with... Shiver me timbers! A boy!
Yes, sir. Are you John Silver?
Such be me name, boy. Long John Silver. Who may you be?
I have a note from Squire Trelawney.
Have you now? Well, give it to me. Come over here, my lad. Don't be afraid.
Are you ill, sir?
Ill? No, no. Just lie to bed for a bit of a rest. Tuck the covers around me, boy. Blasted chilly these days. Yeah. Now let's see the squire's note. Well, so you're Master Jim Hawkins, eh?
Yes, sir.
Going to be our new cabin boy, are you? Pleased I am to see you.
Thank you, sir.
So you want to put to sea, do you? Hunt for buried treasure.
Treasure? Why... I don't understand what you mean, sir.
Come now, my lad. The squire's told me all about you. Your mother keeps the Admiral Benbow in, does she not?
Well, yes, sir.
Yeah. Had a bit of excitement there, I'm told.
A bit, sir.
What happened? Tell me about it.
Well, sir, I was upstairs preparing the rooms for the night when suddenly I heard sounds of a terrible fight downstairs. I ran to the head of the stairs, but I was afraid to go down. Then I heard Billy Bones' voice.
So it's a map you want, is it? You'll have to get it over my dead body.
There was a flash of swords, and Billy Bones let out a horrible scream. I came downstairs as fast as I could, just in time to see the man throw open the door and leave. There was Billy Bones lying on the floor, a cutlass in his chest. I went over to him. Billy Bones! Are you hurt bad, sir?
The chest, Jim.
Hi, sir.
The map in the chest. Beware, Jim. Beware, seafaring man with one leg.
A seafaring man.
With one leg. Beware him most of all.
A seafaring man with one leg.
Aye, and when you see him, run. Run for your life. And then the good Billy Bones died, I suppose. Hmm?
Oh, yes, sir. He died right enough.
The chest. What chest did he mean, boy?
The chest in his room, sir. That's where I found the map.
The what?
Nothing, sir. If you've read the note, sir, I'll be returning to the squire with your answer.
My answer? Aye. Tell the squire and the good Dr. Livesey that the crew for the Hispaniola will be ready to sail by the end of August. Oh, my name's not John Silver.
Aye, sir. Good day.
Good day, lad. 15 men on a dead man's chest. Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum. Drinking the devil had done for the rest. Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum.
Pardon, sir. I forgot. Oh!
Well, then, what's your trouble? You act like you've seen a ghost. It's still me, Long John Silver. I've only got out of bed.
Aye, sir. Your leg.
My leg?
You. You're the man with one leg.
Me? Nonsense, lad. One leg I have to be sure, but I'm just an old sailor. Lost me leg to a whale back in, let me see, 68 it was.
You didn't know Captain Billy Bones?
Billy Bones? I heard tell of him. A pirate, wasn't he? Sailed under the Jolly Roger with Captain Flint, Ben Gunn, Red Ruth, Dick, and George Merry.
You know them?
No, lad, just heard tell of them. Oh, don't be afraid of me, lad. I won't hurt you. Why, I wouldn't hurt a fly.
Oh, no wonder Jim was a little wary of John Silver. After all, he was a seafaring man. And he did have one leg. And that laugh.
Oh.
But Jim overcame his fear. And come the end of August, the good ship Hispaniola set sail for Treasure Island. Long John didn't seem to have many friends among the crew. But he had a pet. It was a parrot. And the parrot had one phrase that it kept repeating over and over and over again.
Shut your blithering mouth.
Mr. Silver, sir.
Aye, Jimmy, lad.
What's the parrot saying?
Who, Captain Kidd? Why, he's predicting success to our voyage. They're right, Captain.
Fisherman.
I call him Captain Kidd after the famous buccaneer. And a rare old bird he is, over 200 years old. He sailed the seven seas, Madagascar, Malabar, Suriname, Providence, and Portobello. It's there he learned to say pieces of eight. And little wonder, 350,000 of them, Hawkins. Aye, there was treasure to be had in those days. You better not be standing here like Evan. It's time for the squire's tea. There's a tray for him and the captain. Avast with you now.
Aye, aye, sir.
Captain Smollett, do you know what I think? Well, his master Jim, he should have something to say about this. If it wasn't for him finding the map, we wouldn't be here. Jim, Captain Smollett wants to call the voyage off and turn back.
Turn back, sir?
Aye.
He's afraid of mutiny.
Mutiny?
From the crew, Jim. Most particularly from John Silver.
Oh. Oh, well, sir, I will admit I was afraid of him to begin with, especially after what Billy Bone said about a seafaring man with one leg. But now that I've come to know Long John, why, he seems quite harmless, sir.
There! What did I tell you?
Very well, it's on your heads. But mind you, when we land...
Land ho! Land ho!
Land! By heaven, so it is! Look out there, gentlemen, there she lies! I've brought you to Treasure Island. Now the rest is up to you.
Little did young Hawkins know how wrong he was about John Silver. But he wasn't long in finding out. The ship lay off the coast of Treasure Island. Night had fallen, And like most young boys, Master Jim was hungry. So he left his cabin and made his way down to the forecastle, to the apple barrel. Just as he was reaching into the barrel, he heard voices.
I'm leader here. You speak soft and you keep sober till I give the word. Then you'll have your fun. We'll string them from the highest yardarm. We'll clap them into irons and make the good Captain Smollett steer the course where we say. Fetch me an apple, Dick. There's a barrel full of them right outside. Avast, who's there? Wait, mates, let him go. Here, someone was eavesdropping. I'll find out who it was and wring his neck with me bare hands.
Squire Trelawney? Squire Trelawney, sir?
Yes? Come in, Master Jim.
Squire, Captain Smollett, you were right. The men, they're going to mutiny.
Jim, are you certain?
I heard them, sir, just now. I was in the apple barrel.
My apologies, Captain Smollett. You're in charge. What shall we do?
I'm not unprepared for this. Tomorrow, we'll go ashore. We'll build a stockade on the beach of the island, transfer the guns and powder. Then, if they take this ship, they'll be helpless with it. They can't sail her. And we'll defend the island and the treasure to the last man.
That sounds like a good plan, Captain.
Aha, aye. Lucky for us, Master Jim found them out. Now they won't take us by surprise.
The next morning, all hands went ashore. Suddenly, shots rang out. The mutiny was on. Ben Gunn and Jim dragged themselves to a little clearing and looked out through the trees toward the ship anchored offshore. There it was, flying from the mast, the pirate's flag, the Jolly Roger, the skull and crossbones.
Well, Captain, this is it.
Aye, but we're safe here in the stockade. Let them try to take it. I'm worried about young Jim Hawkins, though. He's with the pirates.
Oh, Jim's a smart lad. He'll find his way back to us.
Wait a moment. Who's that coming through the clearing? By the powers, it's John Silver himself. Stand where you are, Silver, or we fire.
No, Captain, wait. He's carrying a white flag. It's the flag of truce. He wants to surrender.
Surrender? 10-1 is a trick. What do you want with your flag of truce, Silver?
Captain Silver, sir. Come to offer terms.
Oh, so it's Captain Silver now, is it? All right. Come forward slowly. Hold your fire, men. Now, boost yourself over the wall.
Give me a hand, will you? It's odd for a man with one leg. Come on, give me a hand.
Keep down, Squire. He can manage himself. Now, Silver, what is it you want?
We come to offer terms. Your lives for the treasure.
What?
First, you have a map of the island with the treasure plainly marked. We want it. Second, we take the treasure aboard. Third, you set the course we give you. Agree and you have me word of honor. We'll set you somewhere safely ashore. We'll divide stores with you, man for man. Now, you'll own that's a fair proposition and a handsomer offer you'll ever get.
Is that all?
Every last word, by thunder. Refuse it and you've seen the last of me but musket balls.
Very good. Now hear me out. If you and your men will come up one by one unarmed, I'll engage to clap you in irons and take you home for a fair trial in England. If not, I'll see you all in Davy Jones, full of lead.
Is that your last word?
Aye. Now, tramp, bundle out of here, hand over hand. Go back and tell your pirates what I've said.
Give me a boost up.
Don't touch him, men.
Give me a boost up. Yeah. Don't give a man with one leg a hand over the wall. Well, then, before the hour's out, I'll stow through your old stockade like a rum puncheon.
It's a sight one leg makes going over a wall. Go on, laugh! Laugh, by thunder, laugh! But before I'm through, you laugh on the other side, and them that dies will be the lucky ones.
Having refused Silver's terms of surrender, the battle between the ship's officers and the pirates rages on. Each side had many wounded. Off in a little thicket, Jim Hawkins and Ben Gunn watched the proceedings with great interest.
Jim, my lad, are you telling me the truth?
Aye, Ben, as the Lord is my witness.
That ain't Captain Flint's ship?
No, Ben. Captain Flint is dead, but we have some of his hands aboard. They're the mutineers.
Not a man with one leg?
Aye, Silver.
Silver! If Long John finds me, I'm as good as pork.
Ben.
Aye, lad.
I have a plan.
Aye.
Even if the pirates kill the officers and find the treasure, they can't move it off the island without a ship.
Aye.
There's no one on board the ship now. I'll swim out to her, cut the anchor, and let her drift around the bend out of sight.
Aye, lad. What then?
You make for the stockade. Tell Captain Smollett and the Squire what I've done. Tomorrow morning when Silver finds the ship gone, he may surrender.
That's a good scheme, Jim. If it works, we'll be able to round up the party and set sail for home.
Aye.
Home. Do you think they'll take me with them?
Of course they will, Ben. Now wait till the firing dies down a bit, then try for the stockade. Wish me luck, Ben.
I do. But, Jim, there's something else I have to tell you.
Shh. Listen, they've stopped firing. Now's our chance, Ben.
But, Jim, I got...
The stockade, Ben, the stockade. I'll make a run for the sea.
With incredible good luck, Jim Hawkins fought the tide and swam out to the ship. He cut the anchor and, exactly according to plan, the ship drifted slowly round the bend and out of sight. Then he swam back to the island. His idea was to reach the stockade where he'd be safe. But the night was dark and he became confused. In the half-darkness, he saw a group of men sleeping. Were they the officers or... He stumbled against a branch and then...
Fisherman! Fisherman! Fisherman!
He found that he'd blundered into the pirate camp by mistake.
Avast, you blundering! Who's there? Wait, no, you don't. Hold still while I... Shiver me timbers! It's young Jim Hawkins. Mates, wake up! Look, young Jim's come to pay us a visit.
What? Mr. Silver, I...
Captain Silver, my lad, don't bother to explain. I know all about it. You refused to put in with those lily-livered gentlemen of fortune, and you've come to take your chances with Long John and his men.
No, sir, I didn't.
What's that?
I didn't come to put in with you. It was a mistake.
Look, lad... The men are out of sorts and may be hard to manage. Take your time now. No one's pressing you. But it'll be safer if you say you came to join with us.
He ain't aiming to join. He's a spy. String him up, that's what I say.
Out of John! I've kept me here. We'll do with him as I say. Now, see here, Jim Hawkins. You're within half a plank of death. Or what's a long sight worse, torture. Oh, I can't hold me men off much longer.
You won't have need to. You've bungled the whole job, Mr. Silver, and part of it's on my account. I heard you plotting the mutiny. I was hiding in the apple barrel.
Quiet!
And that's not all. You're marooned on this island. I've cut the anchor and the ship's gone.
Avast, you speak the truth, lad.
Look out there and see for yourself.
Well, what do you know about a thing like that? I never heard anything like that in my whole life.
He's got the anchor, he is. I'll cut his head off for this.
Hold your sword. Hold, I say.
He stabbed me.
Disobey me, will you? Draw your cutlass, will you? Stab the boy, will you? Then you'll answer to me, you lily living lover.
Ah!
if ever I saw one. Now, any more of you care to challenge me authority? The cutlass is waiting. Well, you hurt bad, lad.
No, I'll be all right.
It's a doctor you'll be needing. I've got to hold you as a hostage, but I'll take you to Dr. Livesey in the stockade if you'll give me your word you won't try to escape.
I won't try to escape, Long John.
All right. Listen, you lubbers. I'm taking this boy to the doctor. Perhaps I can talk the doctor into coming back with me and treating some of your own wounds. There's some of you could stand it. But last now, I'll expect to find you all safe and peaceable when I get back.
And so Long John Silver, the most bloodthirsty pirate ever to sail under the Jolly Roger since Captain Kidd, actually saved Jim Hawkins' life. In the dead of night, they sneaked up to the stockade, and the good doctor, hearing Jim's call, came out and bandaged his wound. Jim might have raised the whole stockade, but true to his word to Long John, he did not try to escape. Along toward morning, Jim and Silver returned to the pirate camp.
It was then that Master Jim Hawkins played his trump card.
Captain Silver, sir.
Aye, lad. You feeling better now?
Oh, I feel chipper. I've got something for you.
For me?
Here it is.
What would it be now that you have for me? Shiver me timbers! It's the map! It's Billy Bones' map of the treasure! The vast mates! Look what we've come by! Thanks to Master Jim. Where did you get it, lad?
From the doctor, sir.
The doctor? Oh, without his knowledge, no doubt. What did I tell you, mates? Jim's on our side. He stole the map from the doctor. Oh, you're a good lad, Jim. Stick with me and I'll make a pirate of you, second only to Long John Silver. On your feet, men. The treasure's as good as ours. Hey, hey, hey. The compass don't lie. East, south-east by east, and right up there is our line for the Pole Star and the Jolly Dollar. Hey! Hey! Run for it, mates! It's all yours over the hill. £700,000 just awaiting for us. Run for it! Only a few yards further!
Shiver me timbers! Jim Hawkins, what's the meaning of this?
Why, it's gone, isn't it? The treasure's already been taken.
Gone, rifled, £700,000 and area to blown left. Havash, what's that?
It's Captain Smollett and the Squire, all the officers. We're surrounded, Long John. Surrender. Surrender or be blown to bits.
Trick! Surrounded, am I? Come on, men, they won't take us without a fight. Get out of the way, boy. You'll be hurt.
Not I. I fight with the officers. Here they come.
Let them in. So it's hand-to-hand combat they'll be wanting. Draw your cutlass, George. Dick, Red Wolf. Avast, on your feet, men. It's going to take more than powder and steel to beat us. Don't do it, men. We'll die.
Stop!
Enough! Enough, I say! Hold your fire, Captain! I know when I'm beaten. I know when I've had enough. Jim Hawkins, this is all you're doing. It's a rum day when I let myself be outwitted by a boy.
All right, men. Unarm them. Now, march them back to the ship. When you get them there, clap every last one of them in irons.
He sent for me, Captain.
Hey, Silver. If I were to keep strict to my duty, I'd clap you in irons like the rest. But seeing as how you saved Master Jim's life and brought your men around to give an assistance for the voyage home, well, to make matters short, Jim's pleaded for you. And I've decided to drop the charges.
Oh, thank you kindly, sir.
Get below now. Let's have no more trouble out of you or the crew. We set a straight course for home. And I mean to keep it that way.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Silver, sir.
Aye, Jim. Come along with me to the folks. There's a question I want to ask.
If it's about the treasure...
Aye, the treasure. Who moved it?
It was Ben Gunn.
Ben Gunn? Shiver me timbers, he ought to be dead. Why, we marooned him on the island 3 years ago.
But he kept alive. He found the treasure and moved it piece by piece to a little cave. You see, when you took me to the doctor that night, you made me promise not to escape.
Aye?
But I didn't promise not to trick you. We knew if we gave you the map, you'd break camp and set out for the treasure. Once in the clearing, you'd be easily surrounded and taken.
Boss, it was a clever scheme, lad. Too bad you're such a gentleman. You'd have made a first-rate pirate. Here's the forecastle. Would you care to have a cup of tea with Long John?
Thank you, sir.
It was kind of you to plead for me, boy.
Well, sir, after all, you did save my life.
Aye. It's soft I am in me old age. Not like the good old days with Captain Kidd.
Fisherman, fisherman, fisherman.
Avast, shut your blithering mouth. Now take that bird. Over 200 years old he is. He sailed the seven seas with Captain Kidd. Madagascar, Malabar, Suriname, Providence, and Portobello. 'Twas there he learned to say pieces of eight.
Aye, sir. You told me once before. A long time ago.
I did? Oh, well. There was treasure to be had in them days. Jim.
Aye, sir.
Just between you and me. Do you think we'll ever go treasure hunting again?
Well, that's the end of the story. Jim Hawkins and the Squire, and even Captain Smollett, lived to a ripe old age and enjoyed the fruits of the adventure. As for Long John Silver, well, no one really knows what happened to him, but there's a superstition among sailors that his voice can still be heard shouting,
"Shiver me timbers! Avast, will ya!"
and singing his favorite song. I hope you enjoyed the story. We enjoyed bringing it to you. Marvin Miller played Long John Silver. Jerry Farber, Harry Lang, Ken Christie, and Paul McVeigh played the other parts. Ralph Rose adapted the story and directed the players. We'll be back again next Sunday at the same time with another story. The story of gallantry and bravery that happened in France a long time ago. It was written by Alexandre Dumas, and he called it The Three Musketeers. I hope you'll be listening. Until then, this is Alan Reed wishing you a pleasant Sunday and a week full of happiness and adventure. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio with Treasure Island, starring Marvin Miller and narrated by Alan Reed. First broadcast on radio on December 4th, 1947. We also heard Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks from 1939. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY, at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, here's an episode of You Can't Win from 1956, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
You can't win. Factual stories of men and women who have learnt the hard way, who have taken a shortcut the wrong way, who have lived by their wits the easy way. In a moment, we present The Maharaja's Millions. In 1951, a newsflash from the Muslim state of Kashmir reported that Sahari Singh, the Hindu Maharaja who ruled over 4 million Muslims and was reputed to be worth no less than £40 million, had stepped down from his throne and departed from Kashmir for a destination unknown. Just 26 years before, the name of that same Maharaja had been blazoned across the front pages of newspapers the world over in connection with one of the most sensational frauds in history. The dramatic story of this amazing case began on the evening of November the 11th, 1919, the night of the first Victory Ball at the Albert Hall in London. Hundreds of dancers in elaborate fancy dress packed the floor, and the surrounding boxes rocked with gay revelry. In the most lavish of these was a small party of men in evening dress, all but one dark-skinned. Their host was a slim, good-looking young Indian, who appeared to be enjoying himself immensely. As we join his party, we find him conversing gaily with his white companion, a tall fellow with handsome features and a military bearing.
This is the night of nights, Captain Arthur, is it not?
It is indeed, Your Excellency.
Never have I seen so many people enjoying themselves so much.
Well, it's quite an occasion, you know.
Yes.
Oh. Your Excellency.
Oh, your pardon, Captain. I was merely... That lady.
Lady?
In the next box, looking this way.
Well, what about her?
Is she not a most delightful-looking creature?
She is indeed very lovely.
Exquisite is the word I should use to describe her.
Well, perhaps you'd care to meet her.
You know her, then?
Oh, quite well. She's a close friend of my sister.
Oh, in that case, it should not be too difficult for you to arrange a... shall we say, an introduction?
Leave it to me, Your Excellency. I am what we English call a specialist in such matters.
With a soft laugh and a bow, Captain Arthur took leave of his host and quitted the box, to return directly with word that the lady in question would be only too happy to make the young Indian's acquaintance. And so it was that His Excellency Sahari Singh, Maharaja of Kashmir, first came into contact with the beautiful socialite, Maude Robinson.
So, you're the famous Maharaja of Kashmir?
Well, I would hardly say famous, but...
Is it true you're a millionaire?
I have heard rumors to that effect.
Then it is true. Oh, it must be wonderful to have all that money. To be able to do just what you like without having to think of the cost.
Is that how you would like to live?
That's how everyone would like to live.
Maudie was hardly what the young Maharaja had expected to find, but such naive exuberance on her part fascinated him all the more. He was used to the mature, sophisticated variety of female, and Maudie was a refreshing change, a change he was determined to make the most of. It was with this end in mind that he arranged to meet Maudie on the following day. That meeting proved to be the first of many between the two, and in the weeks that followed, they were rarely seen apart. Then, one evening, as they were dining at a fashionable London restaurant, the Maharaja announced his intention of journeying to Paris for a short stay.
Paris? Oh, how wonderful! We'll have a heavenly time.
We?
You're taking me with you.
Well, I would like to, Maudie, believe me, but it is out of the question.
Out of the question? But why?
What would people say?
Well, who cares? I don't.
Perhaps not, but I do.
Oh, so that's it. You don't want to take me with you.
Of course I do, Maudie. You know that.
Then prove it.
But I...
Take me. Please. Please.
The young Indian did his best to resist her, but Maudie was not to be denied. And 2 days later, complete with a companion and two servants, she left with him for Paris. For a week, everything went smoothly, with the usual rounds of the nightclubs and the theaters. Then, it happened, quite suddenly and without warning. The couple had been to a party and had just returned to their hotel. Maudie didn't feel in the mood for sleep, so she suggested that they have a nightcap together in her apartment. The idea, however, did not appeal to the Maharaja.
No, Maudie, it would be inviting trouble.
What kind of trouble?
The kind I do not wish to be involved in.
But surely there's no harm in your coming in for a drink? Just one.
Oh, very well, but I do not like it.
Much against his will, the Maharaja entered Maudie's apartment. Normally, he wouldn't have hesitated. But tonight, it was almost as if he sensed disaster. Scandal was something he could not afford, and reason told him to beware.
You sit down. I'll pour them.
Well, be quick.
Oh, you old silly. Why must you be so jumpy?
You do not seem to understand my position, Maudie. As Maharaja of Kashmir, I am looked up to by millions of people. I'm their leader, and they respect me, worship me. But the Muslims are a very sensitive race. If I were to be involved in a scandal of any kind, I would lose my hold over them, and very probably my throne.
I still don't see you've anything to worry about. Now, why should you be involved in a...
Maudie broke off with a startled gasp as the door of the apartment was suddenly thrown open and three men dashed into the room, one of them waving his arms and shouting excitedly.
There she is, and there's her boyfriend. I thought as much.
Frank!
Ah, you look surprised, Maudie. Oh, you needn't be. I knew if I followed you closely enough, I'd get the evidence I needed. You see, I happen to be this lady's husband. What? But not for long. I intend to divorce her immediately and name you as co-respondent.
The Maharaja bit his lip and without another word hurried from the apartment. That was the last he saw of Maudie and her husband. But it was not the last he was to hear of the matter. Oh, not by any means. 3 days later, upon his return to London, he received a visitor.
Hobbs is the name, Your Excellency. William Cooper Hobbs of Appleton & Company Solicitors. I'm representing Mr. Frank Robinson. He is suing his wife, Maudie, for divorce, and you have been...
I have been cited as the co-respondent.
That is so, yes. It is most unfortunate that...
How much does he want?
I beg your pardon.
To forget about the divorce.
I'm afraid I don't quite...
Look, Mr. Hobbs, I may be a fool, but I'm not completely devoid of reason. This whole thing, as you are no doubt aware, was arranged...
Arranged?
...as a means to extort money from me. Very well, I am ready to admit the arrangement was a successful one. Now let us get down to business. How much does Robinson want?
Well, as it happens, my client did mention a certain figure.
How much?
£150,000.
£150,000? The fellow must be mad...
Of course, if Your Excellency is not prepared to meet such a demand, there's always the alternative of contesting the suit.
That is impossible, and you know it.
Well?
All right, I will pay. But bear in mind this, Mr. Hobbs. If so much as a breath of scandal touches my name, I will see Robinson, his wife, and your good self, all behind bars. Is that understood?
Hobbs nodded. And a few minutes later left the Maharaja's apartment with a check for the stipulated amount. And there the matter might have ended, very probably would have ended, if Mr. Hobbs hadn't been the greedy type. But Mr. Hobbs was just that. And upon returning to his office, he carefully forged Robinson's signature on the back of the check, went to the bank, and calmly deposited it. He then drew out £25,000. Which he paid over to Robinson later that same day, explaining that it was as much as the Maharaja was prepared to pay. The crafty solicitor's story was a plausible one, but Robinson was far from satisfied with it. So suspicious was he of Hobbs, in fact, that he checked with that gentleman's bank. There he learnt the truth, that the solicitor had obtained no less than £150,000 from the Maharaja and then endorsed the check with a forged signature. The police were immediately called in and Hobbs was arrested on a charge of forgery. Realizing that if the solicitor was brought to trial, the whole story would probably come out, Robinson refused to testify for the Crown. This precaution was wasted, however. Hobbs talked, and the swindle was made known to the whole world. As it happened, Robinson had first thought of the idea. He had consulted Hobbs, and the crooked solicitor had agreed to be a party to the conspiracy. Together, they had enlisted the services of Captain Eric Arthur, a war veteran and acquaintance of the Maharaja. Arthur had arranged the introduction between the Indian and Robinson's wife, and Maudie had done the rest. Simple enough, in a complicated sort of way, and rather ingenious. Indeed, if it hadn't been for Hobbs's treachery, the scheme would undoubtedly have succeeded. As it was a miserable failure, and resulted in a liberal distribution of prison sentences. You see, Robinson got 4 years, Hobbs 2, while Maudie and Captain Arthur received 12 months apiece. The Maharaja? Oh, yes. Yes, he came out on the losing side, too. Oh, his millions were still intact, of course. But his reputation? Well, you know how people talk. Yes. Which reminds me, my time's almost up. Oh, dear me, it is up. I did so want to tell you about the... Oh, please, please, I... Oh, what's the use? You can't win. You just can't.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of You Can't Win from 1956. This has been the Golden Age of Radio. Classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.